Hello and welcome to the Swiss Info Programme. I'm Jo Fay. Here's a question for you. What do a salamander, a tulip and a fossil have in common? Well, all three of them are found in nature. What you might not know is that all three are also being used by scientists to see if nature can help us solve technical problems. Here's an example. Researchers are studying the incredible way that fossils preserve DNA molecules. They want to see if it could give us clues for storing data more securely in the future.
There are two main ways by which people use bio-inspired approach. There is more the one where you see a biological function and you say, wow, this could be really useful for humans. And then figuring out how can you apply that to human problems and human challenges. The other one is more saying, okay, I have a technical problem that I really would like to solve. Let's see how nature has already solved it and then see how I can use that.
That was Daria Dubrovcic, the bio-inspired projects coordinator at EPFL, the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Lausanne. She says that nature's a great laboratory and has a lot to teach us.
Nature does things very, very different than we do, meaning that it usually uses the least amount of energy as possible. It uses completely different types of energy than we do. It does chemistry in water and room temperatures and pressures, because high temperature and pressure are just destructive to life. It works in systems, something that we are still figuring out how to do with now with the big data and all of these things. So in that sense, also nature can teach us lots of things, and seeing how it does and really getting inspired by processes that it uses lead directly to sustainable solutions.
Swiss Info journalist Celia Lutterbacher explains three very different examples of researchers using nature to inspire innovations, or biomimicry, as the approach is called. Here's where the salamanders, tulips and fossils come in.
You might be alarmed to see a massive salamander crawling toward you through the grass, particularly if it seemed to have left its skin and flesh behind. But there's no need to worry. The resident salamander skeleton at EPFL is in fact a robot, and a highly useful one at that.
The salamander is a very interesting animal. It's an amphibian, and it's a very good representative of the first animal that made the transition from swimming to walking, which clearly has been a very key moment in evolution of locomotion.
Auke Eisbiert is the head of the EPFL Biorobotics Laboratory and of the team that designed the mechanical salamander skeleton, which has been dubbed the Pleurobot. He explains that a remote control joystick, representing signals from the higher part of the brain, can direct the robot to turn left or right or switch between walking and swimming. And even though it looks like a toy, the Pleurobot allows the researchers to see in detail how different types of movements are executed in response to these signals. Eisbiert explains that this is very important because even today, researchers still don't really understand exactly how signals from the human brain are translated into bodily movements via the spinal cord.
As people might know, it's really the spinal cord which is the most important part of the brain for controlling locomotion. And by studying the salamander, we can a bit study how this circuit has evolved from swimming behavior, like in eels or fish, and little by little towards salamander and even mammal locomotion. It's still a big unknown, in fact, how the whole circuit of the spinal cord is organized in humans and how it interacts with the body. And so by using the robot, we can investigate hypotheses of how the spinal cord is organized, because the organization of the spinal cord has clearly changed during evolution, but not that much. So there's something very important in this fundamental understanding of the functioning of the spinal cord, with the big hope that you can then re-stimulate it, reactivate these circuits with neuroprosthetic devices in order to restore locomotion in, for instance, paraplegic patients.
Eisbiert says he's enjoyed the synergy between the fields of biology and robotics during his research on the Pleurobot. But when it comes to using animals as inspiration for technology, he has a word of caution for scientists.
I'm really amazed by animals, but at the same time, we should not idealize animals either. They have many constraints also that we might not need in a robot, like need to reproduce, to grow. And also evolution is a bit messy, so the animals we have today are not perfect. But what then is really strong is to find the key principles and replicate those, not all the details, but just the key principles that make the animal locomotion so powerful.
About 75 kilometers northeast of Lausanne, at the Adolf Merkle Institute in Fribourg, Nico Bruns is also interested in developing new technologies based on biological structures. But instead of animals, Bruns is an expert in the plant world. As a professor of macromolecular chemistry, Bruins is the head of a new European Commission bio-inspired materials project that focuses on a plant part that you see every day but have probably never heard of, the cuticle.
Plant cuticles are layered structures. They can control the movement of waxes in the plant cuticle to the surface, and that creates properties like water repellency, but also controls how much water can be taken up. It creates the surface where insects have to stick to the surfaces. I think the most famous example for plant cuticle-inspired material is all the materials that mimic the lotus effect. The lotus plant leaves are very water repellent, so if you put a drop of water on there, it will simply roll off. This is a self-cleaning mechanism that the plant uses, and researchers all over the world have created many, many different kinds of materials that mimic this. And we decided to take this as an example and to see, can we find some other interesting properties in the plant cuticles that can be useful for technological applications.
Because they control the texture and permeability of a plant's surface, cuticles are inspiring the development of materials like lubricants, insect repellents, and even colors.
Some plant flowers are colored, and most of them are colored because they have some pigments in them, some colored substances. But some are simply colored because they have a structured surface, similar to, let's say, butterflies or some beetles. And a famous example for this is these black-violet tulips you find in your own garden. They don't have black pigments in them, but they have a structured petal surface. And structural color is, of course, also interesting for synthetic materials because you can use this for optics. You can coat surface with it and you get a colored surface.
Bruin says that when it comes to using the natural world in his research, he likes to take what he calls a retro bio-inspired approach.
When someone has a good idea, a scientist, and works on it, then you need to see if you can have some analogies in nature to be able to explain this to the general public. And then you see all these links that form, and then you think, oh, well, there's this system in nature, so there's something that you could use as an example. But then you look at this more in depth, and then you can refine your own system.
Robert Grass takes a similar approach to biomimicry in his work in the Functional Materials Laboratory at the Federal Technology Institute, ETH Zurich.
So I think it's often you try to build a concept or an idea, and then you see, we can take explanation or reasoning why it's important or why it works from a natural system.
For his project on data preservation, Grass drew inspiration from one of nature's most important storage units, the DNA molecule. And more specifically, Grass used the fact that DNA can survive undamaged for thousands of years within fossils as the basis for the long-term storage of digital information. And he says that even though most of us, including himself before he began the project, trust our computers and smartphones to keep our photos and messages and other data safe, these storage devices are not designed to be effective for longer than a decade or two. A better solution is needed, and Grass's method involves encoding valuable text, image, or other digital data into the molecules of synthetic DNA for safekeeping. Grass says that two properties in particular make DNA an excellent long-term data storage solution.
DNA has two advantages. One is its stability, and the second big advantage is data density. That's what kind of motivates the shift of pushing for using DNA as a storage device. Because if you look at modern Facebook or Amazon storage centers, how enormous they are, how much space, how much energy they need, there's obviously a need of using smaller places to store that information. Because if you think in a human cell, in every human cell, you have stored the whole genome, which is about 1 gigabyte of information.
But although DNA molecules are relatively stable, they can still become damaged over time with exposure to water or oxygen in the environment. And that's where the fossils come in.
We tried to, let's say, extract or use this idea of a fossil in which the DNA is encapsulated in some solid matrix. So DNA is best recovered from bone fossils or from teeth or from eggshells. And so what we did, we looked for a way of artificially making a fossil. So we choose glass, which is silica, which is essentially what you have in your window. And so we take the DNA and then we grow glass around it. It's just a few nanometers of glass, which then surround the DNA molecules. But we can show that the protection we get for the DNA is really comparable to what you have in fossils.
Comparable in this case means that Grass's method could keep digital data safe for up to 2,000 years. So what information could be so important that it needs to be preserved for so long?
I think it's a very interesting question and also a very powerful one, because if we want to look at history, I mean, we look at history from the books we have. I would think it would be extremely interesting to store something that's democratic as Wikipedia and to make a time frame copy of it and store that, because it's constantly evolving. But then you can, let's say, if you imagine in the future, you look back and you see what that time was interested in. How important Justin Bieber was, or let's say things which otherwise are difficult to, write down in an encyclopedia and judge how big it was or how important it was.
With these three examples of biomimicry, it's easy to see how researchers can save time and energy by looking outside the laboratory to see where nature may have already found a solution to a given problem. And as Daria Dubrovčić of EPFL explains, this is one of the greatest advantages of nature-inspired innovation.
Nature has been innovating for much longer than we have. And from that point of view, we have lots of things to learn, especially because by the mere fact that we live on the same planet and share the same conditions, meaning that we have the same physical, chemical, and mathematical constraints on how we can solve certain problems. And from there on, we scientifically know that often solutions are exactly the same.
For more on this story and to see a video of the salamander robot, visit swissinfo.ch. This program was produced by Celia Lutebacker. Thanks for listening, and thanks to studio technician Daniel Wheeler. I'm Jo Faye.